Welcome to the Continuous Delivery Podcast. My name is Zarar.
I'm Cheesy.
I'm Hino.
I'm Chava.
Today's topic is full stack developer. What does that term really mean?
You know, I think it can mean a few different things depending upon your context. One of the ideas that exists out there is that the person owns the entirety of the software stack, all the way front to back. The problem is that kind of falls apart a little bit in more complex application spaces. So let's take an example. Let's say if you work for Discord, if you're the iOS developer, do you actually also own the backend, or do you just own the mobile app? Or if you're building the Elixir backend, do you actually also contribute to and write code in Rust, which is where they're writing the really low level, high performance? So there are specific skills or specialized skills that come into place. But even in those environments, the goal is to use as few technologies as possible so that people can work through as much of the stack as necessary. As it relates to continuous delivery, though, I think it has a little bit of a different sort of meaning. It probably means what I said before, but it also means that you own your pipeline. It means that you own your production environment. It means that everything related to building the software, ensuring the quality of the software, and delivering that safely to production is all included in that. And that's how I think of a full stack developer.
Are there any myths of a full stack developer? Does such a thing exist? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that they exist. And I mean, I'm always a little bit confused when I hear that term. Most of the time that I hear it is it refers to something that Cheesy mentioned first. It's somebody who can work through all the layers of the architecture, if you will, work on the back end and the front end and so forth. If you have multiple technologies, if your front end technology is very different from your back end technology, uses maybe a different programming paradigm and so forth, I think they're not necessarily always easy to find. Or there might be people out there who are really good at the back end stuff, who are really good at the front end stuff as well. But generally, you will have people who are really good at one piece and are just good enough at all the other pieces, right? So if you're talking about myths, I think one of the myths is that finding full stack developers is an easy thing to do.
I think to a certain degree, it depends on the complexity of your app, though. You know, I mean, if the entirety of your app is basically a standalone website with a database in the back end, it's very possible to use one technology for everything and own the entire stack. But once you start to get larger, more complex apps that have a lot of different technologies, or that, heaven forbid, bring in legacy systems that we have to integrate with, and those legacy systems have to be maintained and changed as well, then it becomes far more difficult to find one person who can contribute to every one of those layers.
I suppose what we're looking for here are T-shaped people who are specialized in one area, but are generalist in other areas and kind of sort of handle their own, at least in a lot of the other areas where they're not specialized in. I guess what really trips up teams who are trying to do continuous delivery is when you find very specialized people who are unable to contribute in other areas of the application. So for example, like if you are a front-end developer and your pipeline is failing, you don't have the ability to go and diagnose why it might be failing. It might be failing because of your code. It might be failing because somebody else messed up or the pipeline has a bug in it. You don't know that because you're so focused on just being a front-end developer. You create a bottleneck and you create a dependency on other people, which sort of prevents you from delivering continuously.
Right. And if you do that, initially and you bring people in who are specialized in one area, but they are open to learning what the other areas are about and they're open to learning those technologies that they need to use as well, then that's all fine, right? As long as your team is open enough and works well enough together to ensure that knowledge sharing is happening. I don't think you can be a superstar in every single possible technology out there. I'm definitely not one of them, and I've seen very few who are. But you can hold your own. That's basically what you mentioned, Zarar, and that's kind of the important piece. And I think it's really important that you have those skills sufficiently in your squad so that when there's a certain type of knowledge necessary at a certain moment of time, that it's not only the specialist who can work on that, but also somebody who happens to be available. And it creates that imbalance if you have those specialties. So I think in order to enable continuous delivery and in order to not fall in a trap where you say, like, where you start building the functionality based on the capacity of the specializations on your squad, I think to enable real continuous delivery, you need that full stack development to some degree. You have no choice.
I just wanted to add one more dimension, which is about the full stack, is about testing and is about the development lifecycle. Because that's the other dimension that sometimes, especially in large organizations and traditional organizations, now gets a specialized role, such as a tester, or could be sometimes a load tester. Sometimes those testers are even specialized. And so this is yet another element of a full stack developer that could avoid additional handovers.
The way I look at it, and I'm going to put my continuous delivery goggles on here, I think it is imperative that everybody on the team understand the pipeline and understand how that works. Understand your container technology, understand your environments, how they are constructed, how they, you know, understand how deployments take place, because that is like life to the team in a continuous delivery world. And imagine if you're the only one available and there's an issue and you don't know anything about those. That would be a gaping hole to me. So whether you're front end or back end or up top end or bottom end or whatever, I think it's important that you understand the path from where you are writing your code all the way to production. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I to go back to your question you asked earlier, Zarar, about over-specialization, I think we've taken it to a ridiculous point where sometimes I talk to developers and I say, so what do you do? And they say, I'm a Java developer, or I'm a .NET developer, or something like that. They're equating their skills with a language or a framework or something like that. You know, I'm an Angular developer. And it's like, my God, for me, any skilled developer should have 3 or 4 or 5 languages that they're proficient at and not be so tied into a specific framework. You know, and so whenever I have developers right away that say, I'm an X developer, I like to try to challenge them a little bit and say, why would you limit yourself so much? What other things have you looked at? And so I think we need to start to push some of those ideas out in the industry as well.
Yeah, so I always compare it. My brother is a woodworker, and he has got a variety of hammers. And all those hammers are tools, just like our frameworks are, like Angular is a tool, and React is a tool, and Spring is a tool, whatever framework out there, right? My brother is not a small nail hammer woodworker. He is a woodworker, and he can use all those tools, and he uses the right tools for the right job. And that's what we as developers need to be as well.
And one definition that we kind of alluded to earlier was that a developer who is able to take something all the way to production, and we talked about pipeline and different languages, but taking something to production also involves working with business people and asking questions and clarifying requirements. Is that part of being a full stack developer?
Absolutely. And it's interesting that as we are unpackaging this, how many dimensions it comes to write software, and you guys probably aware of those very, very small places where just somebody who has an idea sits together with some developers and they just hammering out software like with crazy speed, like the Facebooks of the world comes to my mind, right? And understanding and be able to communicate and be able to translate it into software, I think it's key. And again, comes down to a specialization problem that you guys mentioned earlier, almost like a factory was developed in large organizations where certain people just think of the problem, other people translate that problem into a document, and other people write a code and so on and so forth, right? So we all saw that. And now, thankfully, this is coming back on the developer side where how can this person understand and create that code without those intermediary steps that ultimately led to just misunderstanding and just conflicts?
When I look at job postings for development positions or programmer positions, One thing I always notice is that the language used in there is very specific to frameworks and a very specific language or a very specific tool that is being used. And I find people look at that and they go, oh, that's what the market wants for me. And they kind of take their skills and align them to whatever the job posting is rather than what software engineering is.
So can I ask you, Zerar, back the same this question that when have you seen last where there's a job posting that says, we are looking for a developer who can solve a problem for us?
Should there be?
Well, because in the moment when they are looking for a specific developer, then they are already solving the problem, right? Or specific skill, right? Because ideally, the business would come with a problem, and then you have the developers with the skills that can find the proper tools that is going to solve your problem.
But well, maybe what you're talking about, though, is as a result of the people who are doing the hiring are actually kind of far removed from the actual the real problem, and that they perceive the problem as trying to find somebody as opposed to trying to solve some business issue. And so maybe that's another interesting topic we can touch on sometime. But for me, this past year, I had an opportunity to work with a recruiting portion of the company that I'm working with right now. And again, their only problem was, I need to find people. Give me a checklist of what you're looking for, as opposed to, I want to find bright people who could solve a lot of myriad of business problems.
It really all depends on how you define full stack developer, right? And then we're almost closing the circle there. We heard a couple of things. We heard, first of all, you are capable of working on the back end, you're capable of working on the front end, all the way through all the layers of the architecture. We heard Cheesy also mention the fact that you need to be capable of working on the pipeline, that you understand the infrastructure that is used to maintain your software and to put your software online and put that into production. And Chaba mentioned as well the concept of being a full stack developer, including different skills like testing and so forth, that are not always, I think among us, we consider that part of a development skill set, but not necessarily in the industry is that's not necessarily always considered that way. So depending on what you kind of look at and which kind of angle you take at what a full stack developer is, the reason why these things are really hard to find or why these people are really hard to find is because when you're solving backend problems, the languages are the same, right? Or the language is easy to learn. It's really the problems that you have in a backend are not necessarily the same as the problems that you might have in a front end. The problems that you solve for in testing are not necessarily the same as the problems that you solve for in developing. The problems that you solve for in the pipeline are not necessarily the same as the problems that you solve for in your business application. And it's really experience with those different problems domains and potential techniques to resolve them that I think causes those things, those people really hard to find. On the other hand, it's always been the case that the demand is actually driving what becomes available in a couple of years from now with a little bit of a delay, right? And I think we are indeed in a situation where people have been asking for Angular developers or Spring developers or what have you, right? Or Rails developers a couple of years ago, quite a few years ago, actually. So that demand has driven education, has driven what people start learning, and has driven what is currently available on the market.
When I see someone out of university introduce themselves as a front-end developer, that early in your career, you really should be learning as much as possible and not worrying so much about specialization in a particular area. What do you guys think of that approach for somebody who's just starting his career?
If any of our listeners is in points in their career where they have an opportunity to learn, they have an opportunity to maybe to choose between two jobs, maybe they have an opportunity to do something different, then look for opportunities to get outside of your comfort zone and start learning on any of those dimensions. Start learning about testing, start learning about backend if you're a front-end developer. Because ultimately, it's almost like speaking different languages. How can you express yourself? And that expression at the beginning, it's very difficult because you are focusing on the syntax of the language, on the very, very kind of basic functionalities, and after a certain time, this experience will start coming where you start speaking fluent language and start truly focusing on the problems that you are solving. So I think this is the key thing, Zarar, that are people trying to get themselves out of this comfort zone? Because if they are, then look for opportunities even within the same company to do different jobs. Going to coding events, going to events where you can learn and expose yourself to these kind of other technologies.
Imagine somebody who is 10, 15, 20 years into their career and they still only identify with one language. You know, for me, that's somebody who's wasted a lot of time. That's somebody who, you know, often the type of people that we find that are very set in their ways, because they haven't experimented, they haven't learned new ways of doing things, they haven't challenged themselves a lot. I think it's any age in your career, if you're a developer, you need to continuously grow and continuously learn new things, continuously learn things that stretch the way you think. So if you, for example, if you've only ever worked in object-oriented languages, I would suggest going out and learn a functional language. Or if you've only worked in dynamic languages or statically typed languages, learn a dynamic language or learn something that's going to challenge the status quo that's in your mind.
And it's great. And you're absolutely all right that young developers need to look into those different things, but they might not be aware of the value of them. They might indeed believe that the industry, just because of their education, just because of how universities and schools have thought them to program, they might not be aware that working with strongly typed languages, working with dynamic languages, working with object-oriented languages, working with functional languages, that these skills, that they actually help them down the line. And it's not a it's not a watering down of the specialty that they have. It's actually adding additional tools in their toolkit. So so I don't think it's necessarily the fault of the younger developers. Hopefully they get exposed to those things through working with people who've already seen the light and who know that there is value in those other languages and those other techniques.
And that concludes this edition of the Continuous Delivery Podcast. We'll be back soon enough.